Today is October 5th, the year 2000. That puts me in my 90th year of life. About to tell you about my life. My name is Margaret Corinne Soul Fricky. I was born in Angola, Indiana, on a very windy March 6, 1910. My mother's name is Elizabeth Wolf Soul. Her father named her Lizzie, but she didn't like it. She changed it to Elizabeth. And my father's name was Thomas Irving Soul. My father's name was Dwight Soul, and my father's mother's name was Betty Hathaway Soul Wells. They lived in Angola, Indiana, and I guess they were born in Steuben County, both of them.
You're going to tell us about your mother's mother's name.
My mother's mother's name was Alma Reed Wolf, and my mother's father's name was Benjamin Franklin Wolf, and they all lived in and around Fremont, Indiana.
And do you know the names of your mother's or father's sisters and brothers, your uncles and aunts?
My mother had a sister. Her name was Mabel Nancy Wolf, and she married a man by the name of Yoder. My father had an older sister. Her name was Etta Soul Nash. And he had a younger brother, Harry Hathaway Soul.
Okay, and how about earlier generations, the names of your grandparents and so forth?
Well, I can remember my grandmother's maiden name was Reed, but I can't remember their first names. Mm-hmm. And I know she had a sister, and her name was Kate, and she had a brother, William. My grandfather had a brother Sam, and his father's name was Sam too. My great-grandfather's name was Sam. Mm-hmm. And his brother was Sam, and he had a sister, Adeline, and my mother was named after her. I didn't put her name in with my mother's name, but her name was Adeline.
I see. Now, how about your parents? How did they tell you how they met?
Well, I know that my father sold shoes in a shoe store in Angola, and my mother used to go there to get her shoes. And he always liked to fit people long and narrow, but she wanted her foot shorter. That was not too good, because in the later years she had bunions because of it.
Oh my. What year were they married?
They were married in 1906 in Fremont, Indiana, in my grandparents' backyard.
Uh-huh. And how did your father earn a living when they were young?
Well, he was a shoe salesman. And then later on, he was a rubber footwear salesman. So that meant that he was a traveling man. And he traveled quite a few different places. And we used to go with him, my mother and I.
I see. Well, then, do you have any brothers and sisters?
No, never did. Wished I had, but I didn't.
And where did you live when you were growing up? Where did you live when you were growing up?
Well, we lived in Angola, Indiana. And then when we were traveling with my father, we would go to all these different places where the winters would be cold and he could sell lots of rubber footwear. Like Minneapolis, Ottumwa, Iowa. Then we'd always go back to Angola, and I would go back to the school there. But when I was 14, we moved to South Bend. Then I graduated from South Bend Central High there when I was 18.
And what were you like then as a teenager?
Well, as a teenager, I loved to dance. And my main thing was to get to Lake James some way, to Palatytown, to Bledsoe's Landing, or to Crooked Lake, or to Lake Gage.
Uh-huh. And how about your friends? Who were your friends?
Well, since I didn't have any siblings, there was a family of four girls that lived near me in Angola. So they became my family, and I spent a lot of time with them. In fact, one of them was one of my bridesmaids when I got married.
Oh, my.
And their father had a garage, and we would ask him if we could borrow a car or a truck to go to Lake James, and he would say, "Yeah, but Meg has to drive." That was me.
Well, where did you attend school?
Well, I would attend Angola grade school. I never went to high school there because we were to South Bend by that time. And then I went to South Bend Business College for 2 years.
And so tell me about your first job.
Well, my first job was with Westinghouse Street Lighting Division. And I applied for the job as secretary to the foundry superintendent. And that's where I met my husband, because the men all stood outside watching the girls as they came in and out of the factory. But my husband said, "That girl will never get that job. Emil Hawkinson will never hire her." Well, I fooled him. I got the job.
What were you wearing when Emma would see you?
Wasn't very appropriate for an office, probably, but it was a gray crepe dress, and it had two ruffles, flapper style. And he said the motion of the hips is what attracted him.
Oh, I love that. How much did you earn on that job?
I earned $80 a month.
My goodness, that was pretty good for those days, wasn't it? How about, let's go now to your adult family life. What was the name of your husband?
John Jacob Fricke. And he lived up North Lafayette in South Bend.
Okay, tell us a little bit about your courtship and when you met and all.
I can hear you.
About your courtship.
Oh, well, I met Jack soon after I applied for that job at Westinghouse. He asked me to go for lunch. And he sent a go-between and sent a note saying, "What chances do I have of having lunch with you someday? How about today?" I sent word back by the go-between it would be very nice, because he had a nice new Buick and I didn't have a way of getting downtown. And he took me to Mark's restaurant, Chinese restaurant. It turned out to be a very wonderful place for us for holidays and for anniversaries and for whatever we celebrated. We went to Mark's. Then in later years, a strange thing happened in Omaha. When our son Jack was, should I put that in there?
Sure.
Our son Jack was dean of the cathedral in Omaha, and the next day a young Chinese couple were getting married at the cathedral, and at the rehearsal dinner, this man was sitting next to Jack, and he said, "Well, where do you hail from?" And Jack said, "Well, I was born in South Bend, Indiana," and he said, and the man said, "Was your father's name John?" And he said, "Yes." And he said he remembered him.
Oh, imagine. Oh, small world.
Yes.
Well, how old were you when you got married?
I was 20, and Jack was 23 when we got married.
Uh-huh, and?
We're married in St. James, South Episcopal Church, South Bend.
Uh-huh, on what date?
June 26th. 1930.
Tell us about your wedding day.
Well, it was frustrating and exciting and wonderful. because that was my first misunderstanding with my future husband. I thought he was picking us up, or saw he had made arrangements to have us picked up by his best man. But they didn't come. So finally my future sister-in-law, who was all ready to go down the aisle with her veil on her head and everything, jumped in her car and came out to get us. There were three bridesmaids and myself when we couldn't all get in my father's Dodge coupe. Well, anyway, it had rained that day, and as we were going down to the church, a beautiful rainbow came up. It was just gorgeous.
Oh,
and we drove up in front of the church, and Father Ferguson was just pacing up and down in front of the church with his vestments flying. And he saw me and ran back in the church, and I thought, why didn't somebody help me? I'm the bride. I'm supposed to be a help here. And the poor choir were standing there waiting, and there was one choir member who had wanted Jack for herself, and Father Ferguson said, well, we could have a stand-in for with Henrietta.
Oh, dear, but you arrived.
Yes. Oh. Well, anyway.
Did you have something special that the choir was singing?
Well, they sang, I Promise You. That was one song they sang. And Nick Lieberdick.
How lovely.
The choir sang the wedding march. Because Jack was in the choir, so they processed and sent him a wedding march.
How extraordinary. That's memorable.
Yeah.
Did you go on a honeymoon?
Well, we called it our honeymoon. It wasn't a whole lot of a honeymoon. It was just out to Lake George, where I'd grown up, and it was a very familiar place, but we didn't really go on a honeymoon.
So, where was your first home after you were married?
Well, we lived my parents. My father and mother, my mother went with my dad as he traveled, so we lived with them. They would just be there on weekends.
Oh, okay. And about for how long did you do that?
Well, let's see, until our son Jack was 2 years old. And then I wanted the dining room furniture of my own. Well, first of all, we moved in a little house right in back of my parents, a four-room house. Our backyards were together. But I wanted a dining room set, so we moved to a block away. House with the dining room.
Oh, and you said you'd already started your family. So when did the second child come?
Well, Jack was born 3 years after we were married, on March 13th, 1933. And Tom, well, that's when he moved to the little house, the four-room house. And Tom was born October 3rd, 1935. And Karen was born September 15th, 1937.
And where are they living today?
Well, Jack is deceased. He was dean of the cathedral in Omaha for 20 years, and he died 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
A much loved priest.
Uh-huh. I bet he was. I didn't know him. And what about the others, Karen and...
Well, Tom worked for the Conrad Hilton Corporation for 31 years, and now he's the director of the Kalamazoo County Convention District Bureau in Kalamazoo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to say that I believe he made the move to Kalamazoo because he wanted to be near me. He lived, and he said he would never move north because he liked the south. He lived in Atlanta for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But he came here and got that different job. But the Conrad Hilton was getting very frustrating. And they lived in Stone Mountain and went to St. Luke's Church downtown Atlanta, so that meant driving into town every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that got to be a bit much. And so he applied for this job in Kalamazoo twice. And I thought he wouldn't take it, but he did.
Oh, what a gift. And so he's married?
Yes. He was married first to a very young girl from Sister Lakes. And she was only 19. He was not very much older, 22, I guess. And they had three boys, and they didn't divorce until they'd been married like 22 years or something like that. And then he met Carol, whom he had known in Lincoln, Nebraska. They were in the same theater group. In fact, I went out there one time when one of my grandsons was in a show, and I met Carol, but didn't know she was going to ever be in my life. Well, then Diana, his first wife, decided she didn't want to be married anymore, so that was it. That was not the complete story, but that's what happened.
Uh-huh. And in what year did he marry Carol?
Well, he married Carol. They've been married, I think, about 12 years now. Uh-huh. And they were married in Atlanta, St. Luke's Church, Atlanta. And Father Wheeler came, was one of the, well, he was a guest at the wedding.
Oh, my.
And Father Matthews, who's now the rector of Trinity Church on Wall Street, married them.
Really?
And the other priest was Jim Slack.
Right. So tell us about Karen and Jim.
Well, Karen always said she wanted to marry a priest. And she had none of her dates ever materialized in Benton Harbor. She graduated from Benton Harbor High, and then she went to Western Michigan. Well, then, when my husband died, her father, she wasn't going to move into Chicago with Laurie Scowcroft, but I said, yes, you are. You're not going to stay here. Be an old maid. She was going with a young man here that they didn't get along, and I thought, well, that wouldn't be very good. So, but she did move into Chicago with Laurie. And she got a job with Continental Can. And Jack was in seminary at the time at Seabury Western.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought, oh good, Jack will help me find a priest. And he told her, he said, sorry, sister, you're on your own.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, they all went to the Church of the Atonement in Evanston.
Mm-hmm.
And one New Year's Eve, the church was having a party for the young people. And well, she did date the assistant priest there, Father Harvey, I think his name was. Well, anyway, Jim went to the same party.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen was at the party, and there was no place for Jim to sit. And she said, oh, come over here, big boy, and sit next to me. And that's how they met.
Oh, way to go, Karen.
So they met January, and they were married the following August.
Uh-huh. Do you know what year? About how long ago?
Oh, let me think. 1962.
Uh-huh. And you mentioned about your husband, Jack, having died earlier than that. In what year?
He died in 1960.
Uh-huh.
Only 50. You're 52.
Do you remember any special stories or talents that stood out in your children's lives when they were growing up?
Well, Jack had a beautiful singing voice. He was in all the operettas, and he didn't offer his voice. And finally, Virginia Archer happened to hear him sing. And she said, where have you been hiding yourself? So from then on, he was in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he did sing a lot, but and I guess I promoted him quite a bit with different ones that wanted him to sing different places, and I would play for him. And finally, he told me, he said, I'll sing at Karen's wedding, but that's it. He said, I'll sing in church. I give my voice to the church, but that's it. I think I promoted him too much.
Oh, my. Tell Tell us about vacations. Did you have any kind of really fun vacations when you were young with the kids and all?
Well, we always went on vacation to Lake George. My parents had a cottage. My great-grandfather had the cottage that they were in. Then my grandfather, and then my parents. So we spent all of our summers at Lake George. And Jack would stay with my parents, and then Tom would stay. I guess they stayed together a couple of times. But Karen would always get a sore throat when it came her turn to stay. She'd have to go home with me.
Oh, goodness. Well, we know you have grandchildren, so where would you start with that?
Well, Jack, our oldest, had three daughters, Kathy and Susan and Buffy. And Tom had three boys, John, Mark, and Stephen. And Karen and Jim had two girls and a boy, Corinne, Valerie, and John.
How old are they now in 2000?
Well, let me see. Kathy must be about 46, mm-hmm. and Susan about 44, mm-hmm. and I think Buffy's probably 40. And John was born right after my husband died in 1960. And what would that make him?
60, he'd be 40.
40.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Mark would be 38, and Stephen would be 36. And then Corinne was born first. I think she must be 36 maybe. Valerie must be 32, and John's probably 30.
Uh-huh, yeah. Now, so with those ages, surely by now you have then great-grandchildren to tell us about.
13 great-grandchildren.
Oh, my. Is that too much to get into all the names right now? Okay.
Yes, I have written down.
Okay. Have you, tell us what you've done in the way of community work.
Well, I guess about the only thing I've done is to play the piano. And I've played at Shoreham for 20 years for their social hour.
Oh, my.
Once a month.
Uh-huh.
And then I play wherever they ask me, Crassel. I played for a lot of their receptions.
Uh-huh.
And the Whitcomb.
And then you had a rather special performance in June.
Oh, yes. I had my 90th birthday on March 6th, year 2000. And almost all of my family came, except my grandson John, who was in San Diego, and my granddaughter Buffy, who lives in Omaha. They couldn't make it. And those two didn't make it in July either. But the rest of them all came in July. And we had a great big party down at the Blue Roof place.
Oh, right, at the pavilion.
My son and daughter-in-law had rented that place for the day. And then they had a professional photographer come and took all of our pictures, family pictures and group pictures and all kinds of pictures.
Uh-huh.
And then... to wind it all up, they all came over here to the Whitcomb, and I played the piano for them.
Wonderful.
And they had cake here.
Well, I know the residents loved it, and I'm thinking also, though, of that neat occasion when Monday Musical asked you in June to play. And you played before?
I did. I played the pre-luncheon music for Monday Musical. Last June, and I'm supposed to play this next coming June if I'm still on Earth.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it was a treat last June, I know that.
I might tell you about my musical life. Well, I always wanted to play the piano, and I used to sit down for Davenport and think that was a piano or the windowsill or whatever. And my aunt, my mother's sister, took lessons and played beautifully. And she was a graduate of music from Tri-State College and then go on. And they gave me the same teacher that had taught my aunt. And I started when I was six. And when I was eight, I was getting little pieces and I wanted to hear what they sounded like. So I'd ask my teacher to play them for me. So when I'd take a lesson, she would say, "Where's that note?" Well, I added a few of my own. And she said, "Well, you're playing by ear, you might as well quit." So I did. Never took another lesson. So since then, I've just developed my own brand of music, playing by ear. I wish I could read music, but I can't.
And people are still loving to hear it. Well, here we are again, Peg. Today is October 10th, a week later. And a couple of things we missed last time, so they'll be a little bit out of sequence. You were going to tell us something about your grandfather's career.
Well, that's interesting, and I think the family would like to remember that. It was that he was a blacksmith. That was his trade. And his brother went to dental school, and my grandfather thought, "Well, I think I'd like to go to dental school." And so my mother was eight and my aunt was six. And so he took the train from Fremont, Indiana to Cincinnati, Ohio, and went to Cincinnati, Ohio Dental School. I think there was a remote. And I guess he was down there. Well, he would come home about every 6 months. But that was about as often as he could get home. And so my grandmother's brothers and sisters would go by their house often to see if they had any food and bring them produce and all that they could share with them. Well, it was a little bit of a hard time for them at that time. Well, he graduated, and he used to tell really wild stories about what happened during his school years, but I won't go into that.
Oh, my.
And when he graduated and had his picture taken, I think he's the most handsome man I ever saw in my life, in a tux. Well, he came back to Fremont and set up his office. And he had people coming from miles around because he made dentures that fit. And a lot of the other dentists, they just cracked around in their mouths. But my grandfather made the kind that had such good suction they'd have to take a button hook to get them out. So his fame was spread. And he charged $25 a set.
Oh my.
And his brother, who lived in Angola and was a dentist, didn't like it because my grandfather only charged $25. He wanted to charge $50. No, he did charge $50. So he tried to say that my grandfather bought inferior products to make the dentures. And the dental salesman said, "It's just the opposite. Your grandfather bought the best, and Sam Wolf bought the cheaper."
Oh, dear. Well, how about the days of the Depression? How was that for your family?
Well, we really weren't affected very much by it, except that we knew other people were having hard times. But my dad always had a job, and my husband always had a job. And it just wasn't hard on us at all, really. I'm sorry to say.
Oh, that's really wonderful in another way. Then to World War II, was your husband in the armed forces during World War II?
Well, Jack went to Chicago and tried to enlist in the Navy, but they wouldn't take him because he had three children and he had a job that was important at home. He worked as a power engineer for the electric company. And he was sad. He really wanted to go, but he didn't.
But obviously he was doing something vital at home. Could you tell us anything about wartime at home then?
Well, I don't remember a whole lot about it because it just wasn't hard on us. But I know that, we would go down in Benton Harbor and we would see the German prisoners that they had lined up within a fence. We get down about every night to hear them sing. They sang beautifully.
Hmm.
I do remember that And then I wrote a song about that town, and it was called Valerie. And it was about a little girl, 3 years old, that her mother was sad because the father was in the war, and she would knew that peace would be when her father came home. That was the gist of the song.
Oh, my. Do you remember any of the war effort at home, like rationing?
Well, yes, we had the ration stamps, mm-hmm. But we managed to have plenty to eat.
Uh-huh.
So that wasn't hard on us either.
What about scrap drives?
I don't remember.
I don't remember those. Okay. Well, let's move on to a more fruitful topic then. How about going back to your young married years and tell us about where your first home was after you were married?
Well, we lived with my parents right after we were married, because my father was a traveling salesman and my mother would travel with him and just be home on weekends. So that arrangement was until we moved into a little four-room house where our backyards were together when Jack came. And then, well, when Jack was
your
about...
Your son Jack.
Hmm?
When your son Jack.
My son Jack.
Mm-hmm.
When Jack was about two, I wanted the dining room, so my husband found this five-room bungalow a block away, and we got a dining room set. And my grandson now is using it.
Oh, goodness. What generally was your life like in those early years? ...2000 continued. Okay, Peg. Tell us more about the children.
Well, Jack, our son Jack, was born March 13, 1933, in South Bend, Indiana. And I went to church that morning. It was on a Monday morning. Jack Sr. And I went to church, and the priest said, "Are you on the way to the hospital?" We said, "Yes." Jack was born at 9:05.
Oh, my.
So I guess he was destined to be a priest. Well, and then Tom was born in October 3rd, 1935. And Karen was born September 15th, 1937. Mm-hmm. They were all born at Memorial Hospital in South Bend.
Okay. We know when and where they were born now, and where are they living today?
Well, Jack's family lives in Omaha, and Tom lives in Kalamazoo, but his family are different places. Mm-hmm. And Karen and Jim live in Mount Pleasant, Texas.
Alrighty. Is there anything about their spouses that you want to tell us? Like maybe especially about Jim?
Well, Jack always wanted to be an Episcopal priest. Now, that was my husband who always wanted to be an Episcopal priest. And I think every time he would see Jack, he would say, "How about it, Jack?" And I used to think, I wish you wouldn't do that, because I think that's between Jack and God. But I'm sure that encouragement is why he did decide he wanted to go to seminary.
Uh-huh.
And he was in the business world 7 years before that call came so strongly that he gave in to it. Did we tell about...
Well, this would be a great place, Peg, to tell a couple of stories about the children.
Well, like I said, my husband Jack kept encouraging our son Jack to be a priest. Well, Jack, after college, worked for the Hennis Trucking Company, and one particular Lent, they lived in Detroit, he decided to go to all the different Episcopal churches for the noonday service. And this one day he went to, I believe it was St. Matthew's on Woodward Avenue, and the priest asked him to wait until the people had left. He said, I'd like to talk with you. And so during the conversation, Jack told him he thought he would like to go to seminary, but he didn't have the right entrance credits. He said, well, what do you need? He said, well, psychology. And so the priest said, well, I'm a psychology major. You could use the church library, and I'd be happy to help you. Well, to make a long story short, Jack did become a priest and went back and served that man as his assistant.
Remarkable.
Well, then Tom, he always wanted to be an actor or a disc jockey. And during the war, he tried to enlist too, but his thyroid was zero. So they sent him home and said, we just can't use you. So Tom was home for about 2 years, just kind of looking around for what he was going to do. In the meantime, my husband, Jack, had to go to Chicago for a very serious operation. And Tom was available to go with him, which he did. Well, he knew he had to get a job. He looked around, he found this school to learn to be a disc jockey. But then he had to find a job. And so the priest at St. Luke's Hospital in Chicago gave him the list of names where he might go and get a job. Well, nothing materialized. And so one time he was coming back from one of those trips, and he saw an ad for the Conrad Hilton in a store window. They wanted a bookkeeper, running a bookkeeping machine. So when I went in that weekend to see Jack in the hospital, he said, Tom has a job. I said, where? Working for the Conrad Hilton, running a bookkeeping machine. Well, anyway, that's where he started. And his career just developed after that. He went to sales, went to front desk, and then he went into sales, and then he went into management. And that, he worked for them for, I think, about 31 years. And Karen always wanted to marry a priest. And she had friends here, and after high school and college, she'd exhausted all the possibilities of marriage here. And Laurie Scowcroft wanted to go in to Chicago to the Art Institute. And so they decided to go into Chicago together. Laurie would go to the school, and Karen went in and got a job at Continental Can. And so she thought, oh, this is wonderful. But that, in the meantime, Jack was in seminary at Seabury Western. And she said, oh, good, Jack will help me find a man. Jack said, sorry, sis, you're on your own. Well, anyway, Karen went to a party, New Year's Eve, at Church of the Atonement in Evanston. And there was no place for this young man to sit. There was a big crowd there at the party. And Karen said, come on over here, big boy, sit next to me. Well, that was her future husband, Jim Slack.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, now, one thing leads to another, and let's talk about then the grandchildren that came out of all of this.
Well, Jack and Ann have three daughters. Kathy is our oldest grandchild. I don't know how old she is. I think she might be about 46.
Mm-hmm.
And then Susan, she might be 44 or 42. I can't remember the. And Elizabeth, Buffy we call her. And Tom had three sons. Tom and Diana had three sons. John, Mark, and Stephen.
Uh-huh.
And Karen and Jim have three children. Two girls and a boy, Corinne and Valerie and John.
Well, so that's how many grandchildren in all?
Nine.
Goodness. Is there anything special that you like to do with them when you're together?
Well, we always love to be together, but it doesn't happen very often because they're scattered and and they all, when they come here, they love the beach. And we just love being together. We don't really plan anything special.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are also a couple of great-grandchildren and even a couple of second marriages where you have perhaps some people you could share.
Well, we only have a second marriage. That was Tom. Mm-hmm. And his present wife of about 12 years is a wonderful gal, Carol. And she loves Tom's children like they were their own, and they love her.
Oh, that's wonderful. And about great-grandchildren?
Well, I have 13.
Oh, my. That's probably a bit of a recitation.
It is.
Much. Okay. All right. How about moving to the unfortunate topic of have there been any deaths of loved ones in the family that you
Well, share? My husband Jack died in 1960. And I told you about Jack being in the hospital in Chicago. That's how Tom happened to go into Chicago and happened to get his job at the Conrad Hilton. Mm-hmm. Well, then Jack was only 52 when he died. I was 50.
Oh, my. And what year?
1960. Mm-hmm. And that was in April 7th of 1960. And Tom's son, John, was born June 2nd of 1960. And so when Tom called me to tell me, he was crying. He said, his name's John.
Oh. Oh, very moving. What a nice tribute. And you unfortunately have lost one of your children, too.
Yes, I lost our oldest son, Jack, in 1990. At that time, he was Dean of Trinity Cathedral in Omaha. And he had been dean for 20 years. He was a very much loved priest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, you are retired now, but you did have a career, so perhaps you'd share that with us.
Yes, I was doing a lot of volunteer work, Red Cross drives and all of various cancer drives and all those things, being away from home a lot. And I thought, when Jack and Tom were in college, I thought, well, maybe I should be helping financially. And so I asked Vi Walker if she knew of anything. She worked at West Michigan, and she said, yes, we have some part-time work. And so she got me a job. They were going to do an advertising project. And so I went to work at West Michigan to put out that advertising. And so I was supposed to have days off to play, to go to my bridge club and to do this, that, and the other thing. Well, I didn't have a day off. I worked for them for about 13 years. Well, then when that advertising stint was over, Mr. Jeffers wanted me to be his secretary at the Chamber of Commerce, which he was a director of at that time. Well, then before that materialized, he decided to put Remington Rand Hardex system in, and he said, do you want me to grow up with it? So I started out with a Hardex system. Oh. And I did that for many years. And I guess it was pretty good because they said they could have taken the inventory off from it rather than doing a physical inventory.
Oh, my.
Everything that went in and out of the building was through that Hardex system.
Mm-hmm. And moving back to your husband Jack, how about his career? Did he realize his career when he was working?
Well, I don't think he really did, because he always wanted to be a priest. And he always worked hard and had a job. Well, he worked for Whirlpool and for when he died, he worked for Close Electric as a salesman. Mm-hmm. And so he was studying holy orders to be an Episcopal priest. But the priest he was studying under thought he was too old and really didn't encourage him very much. And I think that's why he encouraged our son to be a priest. But he said, well, that's fine, because my whole parish will be wherever I go. as a salesman. Mm-hmm. And he sold the church more than he sold his product.
Did you, after your working career, did you then have a chance to return to community efforts?
Well, let's see, I retired in 1982. My mother died in 1981, mm-hmm. and I worked a year after that. Mm-hmm. And, well, about, I used my music mostly. Mm-hmm. To volunteer at Shoreham and Crassel, wherever they asked me. That was mostly what I did for volunteer work.
Well, there was a real calling for that. Any other hobbies?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Tried a few, but they didn't take.
What about travel? Have you traveled to other places in the world or on vacations?
Well, when Jack was, he was dean of the cathedral, the deans always got together once a year, all American deans, all European deans, mm-hmm. and they went together to one place. Well, this year they were going to England, and so they called me one night and said, "You're going to England with us," which I did. And that was an absolutely wonderful trip because we weren't tourists. We were taken in like royalty.
Oh, isn't that marvelous.
And there was one great big party at the Lord Mayor of London gave for all of us, and each one of us was announced individually as we walked into the room.
Oh my.
And we were, Jack chose Sheffield, England, as a place most likely like Omaha. All the deans chose a different cathedral to go to. Mm-hmm. And so we stayed there several days, and I remember one morning, knock on my door, and the lady, the what they call a provost's wife, mm-hmm. instead of deans, they're called provosts in England, mm-hmm. and she said, "Would you like crumpets and tea?" I think that's what she said.
Oh, my.
And so I did. It was, well, they treated us just wonderful, just beautifully, all of them.
Oh,
well, then the last, when the deans got together for the last great big service, it was the Lincoln Cathedral, and Archbishop of Canterbury, Ramsay, was a speaker, was a preacher.
Oh, my.
And the organist at Lincoln Cathedral had composed music especially for the occasion, and all the deans processed in, and I was hearing the Star Spangled Banner, and then I was hearing the Battle Hymn of the Republic, and it was just absolutely amazing. He incorporated all this music, and the boys' choir were singing, and it was just magnificent.
Oh, it had to have been. Do you recall the date and about what year that might have been?
I think this might have been about 1984. Well, I think it was about a year after my mother died.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, have there been any other marriages or relationships that you would share?
Oh, well, in 1968, one day at church, I met this gentleman, Sid Collins, and he said to me, "I'd like to know you better." And I said, "Well, call me up sometime." I don't know what to say to him.
A little out of practice?
Yes. And so, he invited me to go to lunch. Of course, I was working, and he didn't have a car, so I was the transportation. And I only had an hour for lunch, so that was kind of a rush deal. So after we'd done that for quite a while, I suggested that we go to dinner instead. And Sid always liked to go to the very nicest places. Mm. And he wanted all the service that he could possibly get, your car parked and everything.
Mm-hmm.
A perfect gentleman. He certainly was.
He was.
And our relationship lasted about 10 years.
Mm.
He was very, very good to me. He used to see a dress or a suit in the Chicago paper, Marshall Fields, and he'd send for it. He kept me in clothes for about 10 years.
Oh, my. Oh, he was a lovely person. What was family life during your favorite holiday?
Well, we always had family gatherings for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And then the summertime, everybody would come home. And we never did anything special, just to be together and enjoy wherever we were.
I've seen some of your gatherings. They're very special.
Very special.
Now, the next question here, you're going to laugh. Does religion play an important role in your family?
Religion plays a great role in my family. I was reared a Methodist. And when I met Jack, it was about Easter time, and I asked him if he would like to go to church with me. I went to St. Paul's Methodist Church in South Bend. Mm-hmm. And he said, sure, because I said they have such beautiful flowers. Well, that church is endowed by Studebakers and Olivers, and all they really was on Easter was just tons of flowers in that church. That's what it meant to me. Well, I should go back and tell you that I was going to church there. My friend Catherine Canode was a member, and we were in the choir. And they had a revival, a whole week revival. Well, the last night of the revival, they asked if anybody wanted to walk down the Sawdust Trail and join the church. And Catherine poked me and said, you go. And so I did. Went down, joined the Methodist Church. Well, then they found out I hadn't been baptized. I was kind of backwards. So I had to go to the minister's study and be baptized, get it back in shape. Mm. Well, anyway, after I met Jack, well, I was dating Jack. He sang in the choir at St. James and the Episcopal Church. And I would go with him, and I would go into the chapel where they were having confirmation classes.
Goodness. Who do you suppose had the greatest influence upon you while you were still young?
Well, my parents, mostly my mother probably. Mm-hmm. My dad was a very gentle, quiet person, but my mother was a strong person, and she knew what she wanted and wanted me to do, and she was kind of a controlling person. I felt she controlled me.
And what has helped you get through the tough times?
My faith. If I hadn't had the church, I would have fallen apart many times. Mm. It was a stronghold around me. I knew it was. Always has been.
Can you cite any particular events that come to mind?
Well, just when these things happen in our lives that we can't handle by ourselves, the church is there.
Mm-hmm. Peg, are there any stories that you'd like to tell that I've not asked you about? I think you mentioned something about caring that you'd like to tell.
Well, like I told you, did I tell you Karen and Jim met at a New Year's Eve party at the Church of the Atonement in Evanston? Mm-hmm. Well, then that was, of course, January. And then in February, they were engaged and married the following August. Mm-hmm. And there was a great big fashion show at the Church of the Atonement. And Father Bruce Wheeler and Marge and their daughter Sarah and I went in for it. Mm-hmm. And Karen had been dating the assistant priest there at the church, and he sort of caught on that something was going on, and he said to my daughter-in-law, Anne, he said, "What's happening here?" And she told him, "Well, you're too slow, you missed out." So, well, anyway, they were married. Well, they finished their seminary year, and their first parish was an Indian mission at White Earth in Minnesota.
Oh, my.
And so I had visions of her living up there very primitively. But when I went there, I found that she had a very lovely home, and across from this great big church, St. Columba. and it was an Indian mission. And the all Indian people sang in Ojibwa. Jim always loved the Indian people, so he got along fine with them, but Karen didn't know about them very much, didn't understand them. Well, she'd grown up with the fact of having a Palm Sunday tea, and so she wanted to put that in their lives. So Palm Sunday came along, and she prepared lovely sandwiches and cookies and everything for this tea, used all of her lovely silver service. Nobody came. And she was heartbroken. That was her first big disappointment of her parish life. Well, I guess Jim understood that Indians weren't going much for teas.
Too much of a culture gap.
That's right.
Oh, dear. Well,
well, then when their first child was born, she was born in Detroit Lakes. And I had visions of that hospital being very primitive, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted Jim to tell me when she went into labor, which he did, which is a big mistake, but 56 hours later she delivered.
Oh, my.
And finally, I just couldn't stand it any longer, so I called the hospital. And I talked to the Mother Superior. It was a Roman Catholic hospital. And I said, you have to do something. You have to have a consultation or something. And she said, oh, she's doing just fine. Don't worry, she's doing just fine.
Oh, yeah.
In a Roman Catholic hospital with a Baptist doctor and an Episcopal priest for a husband.
Oh, that poor woman. Well, if you could give a message about life and love to your children, your grandchildren, and the generations to come, what would that be?
Well, I just think if you want a wonderful, wonderful life, you must be in the church and have faith. And I found it in the Episcopal Church. I found it has joy and it has acceptance and it has everything that you need. It's just a stronghold of strength around you. And I believe that we should just all take advantage of that. That's what I would hope my family would do. And I think they are.
Oh, amen.